Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/Twitter. Maybe you're listening later on Audible. I don't know. Are we an audiobook? Maybe. Who honestly even knows? Wherever you're listening, whether it's live or not, we appreciate you being here this evening. Unfortunately, our third co-host, Justin, cannot be here this evening. He's got a job.
Hollywood Justin, man, living his best life.
What is he doing? He's pitching Barbie 2, I believe, out in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yes. Barbie 2. Barbie
Ken dies.
that's the name of the movie. Barbie 2. Ken dies.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, dark. Are they getting Gerwig back?
Of course.
Great. You're a real deal maker. That's why I go to you. Like, I don't even read Variety anymore, Pete. I call up Pete or I text him sometimes.
And what's great is I'm wrong 60% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Better than the trades these days. All right. I don't know what we're getting into here. We have a lot of great guests this evening. So let's stop with the weird bits about Barbie and instead get into bringing them in. Our first one is the creator of Riot Force from SourcePoint Press. Ladies and gentlemen, Austin McKinley.
Woo-hoo, welcome.
Austin, welcome. Excited to have you on. Excited to talk about this. But first, I want to turn to Pete for a segment that usually happens towards the end of the interview, but I know probably wants to happen now. Pete, do you want to talk about what's behind Austin?
Yeah.
By the way, just to be clear, the section is not always what's behind Austin. It's just your name is Austin.
Also, it looks like you got a cool nerd wall going on behind you. Do you mind walking us through some of that there? Also, Ride Force, we'll get to in a moment.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits from some movie props of stuff that I've worked on. There's like a toy of mystery. There's some books that are my sort of go-to science fiction touchstone comic books. Like,
Do you have a favorite piece back there, though? Something that's like in a fire situation, the first thing.
Yeah, what are you grabbing?
I don't know. I think I would leave all of that.
Oh, no!
That's kind of the right answer.
Sure. Yeah, family first. Yeah, the living people in your house and animals, but
Pete, for anybody who's listening, just so you know, he now has faced the camera the right way after we chided him on the podcast about this. And, or maybe it was off the podcast, and I'm just bringing this up, but now has this like very cool wall of comic book boxes. You do the Spider-Man Steve Ditko thing, like lift it all up on your shoulders, right?
Exactly. Just, yeah.
Are they on casters? That makes it easier.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about Riot Force, this new comic. One of the things that I absolutely love about this, correct me on the age, but you came up with this pre-TED. You were like 8-9 years old, and now you're getting back to it and sort of using the same script. Is that correct? I mean, I assume aged up a little bit.
It's referential to some of the original, you know, like the guiding principle of this project has been, is it something that a 13-year-old would draw on their book cover? Lines from the original that are still like that, you know, that still have that kind of unintentional humor or obliviousness or even unintentional poignancy, those I kind of preserve, but the rest of it is wrapped up in a more cogent narrative, I think.
Now, when you say preserve things from the original, is that the sort of thing like kids you knew back when you ate would be like, oh shit, I remember that from the original Riot Force. That's so cool.
For the, you know, fewer than 50 people that might have read those, maybe.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell us the idea of the book beyond the structure of it? What's the pitch for the book?
So it's a group of unruly super cops who have to fight a deranged eco-terrorist that has a grudge against their leader, and a evil corporation that is trying to kill them and replace them with its own unkillable crime-fighting product. So it's ridiculous action, adventure, humor, and nostalgia a little bit. One of the best comments that I got about it is, I can't believe I never heard of the awesome toy line on which this comic is clearly based.
That's great. Yeah, I really love this kind of over the top 80s kind of feel. Yeah, it's a little bit like a time machine going back. I love this, the whole tone of it. It's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, no question. Just wanted to put that
out there. I'll make several statements in a row as well. Let's go back to the toy of it all. So you are creating something that feels like this original toy line in a certain way. Was there anything in particular you were inspired by? Like, were you looking at a Transformers or a G.I. Joe or something like that? And then
I mean, it's all in the soup, you know, like mm-hmm. no one thing specifically, but that was, that was my era growing up. So, you know, yes, G.I. Joe, Transformers, also RoboCop, also Terminator, also, you know, Aliens, whatever, you know, all of that kind of, sci-tech thriller stuff is there. But also it's the pastiche that I was making at the time when I was a kid, you know, the stuff that was coming through and getting wrapped up into my own sensibility from a very early age.
Given the gap between when you came up with this and now, and for anybody listening who is watching right now, Austin is, I believe, now you're 15 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. <Getting up there. laughs> Excellent. No. Obviously, there's been some time in between it. What spurred on doing this now? Like, why was this the right time to revisit this project?
It was kind of a now or never thing, you know, like, I had been doing more comic book work. I'd been out of it for a little while, working on a game development and documentary project. And I did a graphic novel with Dirk Manning at Source Point Press. So I was sort of in the mode of doing long form sequential art. And, you know, as I was looking for, you know, what's the next thing I'm going to devote some time and energy to, it was kind of taking stock of, you know, there's some unfinished business with that story that I never quite got to bring it all the way home. And, you know, I would enjoy revisiting that. And so it kind of felt like a now or never kind of thing. Like, if I was going to do one more project, what would it be?
So this Riot Force is actually the thing you would take out of your burning house. Like, that's the thing you would
grab. There it is.
Well, it lives in the cloud, thankfully. So I don't okay. have to, I Great. Mean, you know, maybe the original pages would be a loss, but.
Well, so at this point, where are you at on the book? How much of it is done? What can people expect? What do you want to plug there?
I am this week inking the last three pages of what would be issue 8. So be a 275 page story, more or less, when I'm done and I'm in the, I guess the mid 240s.
Wow. And so where can people check out?
About 44 more pages to go.
All right. Oh, cool. Getting into the home stretch there. Home yep. stretch. I don't know why I said that like that. where can people find out more about you or Riot Force?
RiotForceComic.com is the URL. Also AustinMcKinley.com. Got a newsletter. You can keep up for the latest constantly changing
information.
Excellent. Sounds like there's
it's a fast moving thing.
Yeah, that's comics, baby. Like I always say on the show. Austin, thank you so much for coming on. The book is very fun. I'm looking forward to seeing it finished and in your hands and in our hands. Thanks so much for coming on. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Riot Force. That was Austin McKinley. And you can check it out soon from Source Point Press. Let's move on to another one. Taz Mukanik is the creator. I announced your name first instead of the book. I'm sorry, so I'll bring you in. Taz Mukanik is the creator of Lost Time, a book that's been out for a little while now from Penguin and is a absolutely delightful, wonderful, all-ages book that is not only a fun adventure, but got me choked up multiple times while I was reading it. So darn you for playing with my emotions.
Oh, dang, I got you.
Yeah, you did get me. So I love this book. Do you want to give the pitch for it rather than me? I'll kick it over to you.
Sure. It's Lost Time. So it's basically about a girl who wakes up and she's just in the Cretaceous. She's with dinosaurs. So she has to basically use her her wits and stuff to survive. Luckily she runs into a little egg when she's there, almost immediately, and that hatches into a big pterosaur, which helps her out on her journey. She names it Ada. The girl is Evie, I guess I should say names. Basically this big pterosaur, she ends up learning how to ride, and they have to fly across the world and find out ways for her to basically contact her parents and get back home or get back in touch with them.
I just wanted to say, this is just such a beautiful, I love your art style, the world you create. I want to live there. It's just so bright and beautiful. You do such a unbelievable job of taking us to this place and bringing it to light. I was just so impressed by this.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
Well, one of the things on what Pete is saying, thank you again for the statement, Pete. One of the things on what Pete is saying, I really appreciated, and maybe I'm totally wrong here, but your devotion to drawing dinosaurs kind of the correct way. At least some of them have feathers. They seem to have a more modern interpretation of it. How much of it was research and how much was you pushing the envelope in terms of the looks?
Oh, gosh. There was definitely a lot of research. I'm a big dino nerd. For the last few years, the story sort of surfaced from that. I just dove headfirst into learning about dinosaurs and especially new research into them. For this story in particular, obviously I did try to base almost everything in a lot of what we know and a lot of recent research and stuff. But I did kind of, in some cases, push it a little bit. Mostly my idea for, my goal for this one wasn't necessarily to be 100% accurate, because you never really can, and that's going to get outdated in a few years because we're always learning new things. It's crazy. I basically wanted it to be kind of a new spin. I wanted kids to see these dinosaurs and be like, oh, I didn't know a T-Rex could look like that. And it's not exactly unfounded in research.
That was the one that jumped out to me in particular, where you do introduce this T-Rex character late in the book. And it legitimately took me a second when Evie refers to the character as a T-Rex. I was like, huh, what are they? Oh, right. Okay. That's, they have feathers. They don't look like Jurassic Park necessarily. So I thought that was very cool. I was really struck by that. And the looks. Yeah, Pete.
I was also really struck by not only the look of the dinosaurs, but the relationship that she has with Ada is just amazing. What was your inspiration by this? Was there a movie that you were, or did you have a pet growing up or a pet dinosaur growing up, I should ask maybe?
Oh, I wish. I guess I do. I had a little bird that's technically a dinosaur, but I had dogs and stuff growing up. And I was always a big pet person. A lot of big inspirations, How to Train Your Dragon, stuff like that. a big inspiration for me from when I was little was there's these books, Dinotopia, which is there's like really, really pretty painted books. Admittedly, I need to reread them because I don't think I really read them as a kid. I mostly just looked at the art because I'm like, this art is so gorgeous. I don't want to read the words. That's a lot of words.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. But they also rode big pterosaurs in that book. And I remember that always being really striking to me.
One of the things that I thought gave you an interesting challenge, not necessarily an insurmountable challenge because it's a comic book, but other than one character, pretty much every other character is nonverbal. You have these dinosaurs that maybe are making little sounds here and there, but for the most part, obviously, they're not talking dinosaurs. So what did that involve, particularly in terms of, I like the fact that you relatively limited Evie's dialogue. I feel like there could be an impulse to overwrite her in a certain way and overdescribe things. Was that anything you struggled with at all?
Oh man, you know, not really. I like to draw characters acting almost more than I like to draw them talking. So for me, this was almost easier to write than making a whole story where everyone's talking all the time. I just love drawing expressions and like characters.
Yeah, that really comes across the communication just in the facial stuff that you portray in this is really impressive. The range that is portrayed just by certain looks that we immediately know what they're feeling. It's really amazing. Did you like, was there a certain like kind of like, oh, like an anime style or a manga style that you were maybe trying to, or are you just a big like expressions fan?
I mean, I definitely was a big manga reader as a teen, so that influence is always going to be there. But I just always love drawing expressions. It's like my favorite part of drawing in general. You can make it funny, you can make it sad, just so easily. So it's just a fun part for me.
Cool, that comes across for sure.
We got a question here from YouTube. Oop, wrong comment. Sorry. Stray Bean says, "What are your thoughts on the Primal cartoon? Have you seen Primal?"
Oh, I haven't seen it yet, but I've been meaning to. It looks really cool. That's all I can say. It looks really cool.
I can see why they said that, though. It's kind of the story of somebody and their pet dinosaur. So.
Yeah.
There you go. We mentioned this earlier, but I really like the decision to, not exactly a spoiler because it's literally the first page, but start Evie off already back in time. What led to that decision structurally?
That was kind of always the case, I think. That's how, I think even in the first draft, I just felt like, I just wanted to start in the action, basically, like, and then kind of reveal the backstory throughout the story. I feel like it's just, it feels better that way for me.
Yeah, makes sense.
And given, without actually getting into spoilers, given that you still have this world open by the end, are there plans for more, or do you feel like you've said what you needed to say with Lost Time?
It is pretty complete. It was intended to be kind of like its own story. I do have ideas for like future like stories within this sort of universe that I've kicked around, but if it depends on whether I'll get to them or not, I don't know.
All right. I mean, jumping back into the book for a second, this is always an interesting line, I think, to walk with any story that's aimed towards all ages or kids or young adults or anything like that in terms of danger for the characters. And you have some moments that I think there's some legitimate moments of terror or sadness or loneliness. How do you modulate things like that when you're approaching a story like this?
Gosh, yeah, you know, it is hard. And honestly, I have to say there were some points that I even held back that my editor was even like, no, you can go. Like, you can go for this. And I was like, are you sure? Like, I'll go for it. Like, I'll do it. And I mean, I will go for it if need be. But like, yeah, it is always like, I don't know, this is a kid. I don't want to like make it too bad for them. Mm-hmm. But I think it's worth, like, a character has to go through, like, struggles and stuff, even if they're a child and this is a kid's thing. But it's worth it in the end for them still.
Yeah. Speaking of the kid at all, this is just for me, something that I was wondering about by the end of the book. How much time passes over the course of the book?
Technically about 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Ooh, that poor kid.
Yeah.
I won't get into spoilers. I know this has been out for a while, but at some other point I will ask you why you put that poor kid through that. But
yeah.
But it's great. Really great book. Yeah, like we're talking about beautiful art and just a really beautiful story that was very touching. And I think, I don't know, it's the sort of thing that I read it for the show, but I want to give it to my kids because I think it really has a lot to say about kids and parents and how they relate to each other as well. So great, great work.
Oh, that's really awesome. Like thank it. You.
Yeah. Yeah. Taz, anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
Oh, gosh. I guess the big thing, go to windywallflower.com. That's me and my partner, all the stuff we make. We make a bunch of other comics and stuff too together.
Right.
Awesome. We'll definitely get to check that out. Tess, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care.
All right. All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Lost Time. It's out now from Penguin. You can get it anywhere and you absolutely pick it up. I really, really love this book.
Oh my God. You're taken to a magical place.
Got me
and
right
then
there.
You're taken on an emotional roller coaster and it's worth it.
100%. Totally agree. Pick that up. Last but not least, we have one more guest for you. He is one of the guys, one of the main guys behind Surviving Comics.
Yeah.
New documentary coming presumably soon or soon-ish, which we'll get into, I'm sure. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Niccolo. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
How you doing? I got to say, I'm like so excited to see those two young creators. Like people say like kids aren't into comic books anymore. But I think they just proved them wrong.
There you go. We solved it. We saved comics right here on the show. well, Joe, so you have this documentary that you're working on, which puts together, at least as far as I know, presumably you can talk a little bit more about it. But you talk to a bunch of different comic book shop owners about their process. It sounds like from the material and it sounds like from everything I've seen. Versus a lot of the conversation that literally is going on right now in the comic book community, this seems to take a more positive bent on it and how they've created communities around themselves. You're scratching your chin, which seems to indicate that I'm wrong. But
you're not wrong. But that's where it started.
Okay.
So all right, okay. I'll just run it through from the start.
Okay,
so,
please.
Last year, so I own a video production company. It's called Driven Films, and we do mostly motorsports work. And we haven't been as busy as we'd like to be in 2023. So instead of just, twiddling our thumbs, sitting on our butts, you know, we decided as a group to come up with something that we could do that we're passionate about. And we are very passionate about telling stories through video, through filmmaking. We love doing documentaries, so we decided to do a documentary on something that I hold near and dear, and that is comic books. So basically, I initially came up with the idea or, you know, the concept of honoring the comic book shop, right? You know, telling the story of these amazing places that we visit, you know, also the medium, kind of like a little history of the medium itself. And then we quickly learned after interviewing just these first batch of shops that the industry is not in as good of a place as we thought from the outside perspective. So now it's turned into, you know, more of an investigation into why is the industry not doing well at the moment. So that's where we're at. So we want to, you know, not only honor and celebrate comic book shops, but we also want to discuss like, how can we help comics survive?
Well, let's talk about that a little bit then, because like I indicated, there's been a lot of different conversations in a lot of different directions lately about the comic book industry dying, whether it is or it is not. We had Ed Brubaker on the show last week and talked to him about it a little bit. And his estimation is there are problems in the world of DC and Marvel, but elsewhere, maybe not quite in the same way. What's your take on that in particular?
I'll lay it right there on the line is that, you know, what we've been told is that Marvel and DC don't care. And it's like you just said, you know, like the independents seem to be doing things right. The smaller publishers seem to be doing things right. But, you know, we're starting to see more of a little bit of a narrative based on just corporate greed. I know it's cliche, but it just seems to be that, you know, Marvel and DC just are not listening to not only the shop owners, but also the fans, the readers, the collectors, you know, putting out all these variants, you know, multiple exclusives, raising prices. Like, you know, my personal pull list has diminished because I can't afford, you know, a dozen $6 books or $5 books, whatever it is. And it's unfortunate because there are a lot of good stories out there right now, despite what people are saying. You know, out of the hundreds and hundreds of books that we see on the walls every week at a comic book shop, they're not all bad, no matter what anyone says. So there's a lot of good stuff, and I unfortunately can't read it all. I can't buy it all because I can't afford it. And I know I'm not the only one. So there's a lot going on. And I, to answer your question, this is like a long-winded answer. Yeah, it is. It does seem to be, and for what we're hearing, it is mainly Marvel and DC, which is unfortunate.
Can you talk a little bit about how you chose these comic book shops? Were these local comic book shops that you went to and loved? Was there outreach? How did you approach these initial ones in particular?
So I guess we could start with the first one, which was Blackbird Comics and Coffee House. And, you know, when you're you have no proof of concept and you're just going into it with just an email, right? You don't even have a logo yet. Didn't even have a full name for the documentary yet. We were thankfully welcomed into their home because their comic shop is their home. It's a husband and wife, and Candace and Dave, and an amazing shop. And I'd never been there before, right? But an amazing shop. It's a comic shop / coffee house. They've got a section for vinyl records, and their coffee shop is like amazing. They've got like stuff that makes Starbucks look like silly. It's so good. Really good comic selection as well. They're very reader centric, right? Like, I honestly wish I lived near them. Like, that would be my shop, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry for everyone else, but I'm cheating on you. But to answer your question, no, I didn't have like a favorite shop because I just am kind of new to my area and I don't have a shop. I do now, but I did not have a shop that I was frequenting. In fact, a lot of the shops that I grew up at, they're gone, you know, grew up going to, they're no longer around. So I didn't have any connection. So going into it, my goal as the director was to find shops that are interesting visually, right? That look great, but also that the owners have a story to tell. So we interviewed the owner of Florida's oldest comic shop. His name's George, and his shop is A&M Comics in Miami, Florida. We interviewed George because it's an older shop, right? I think he's got a lot of industry insight. We also spoke to Cliff Biggers, who owns Dr. No's Comics and Games in Marietta, Georgia. And the reason I spoke to Cliff is he's actually was the longtime editor of a very well-known, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of it. It's on the tip of my tongue, but a newsletter that he's been publishing since the 80s. Uh-huh. And basically, if like we were going to talk about a comic historian, like Cliff is the guy, right? Very, very well known in the industry, very, very well versed. We also spoke to interview the owner of St. Mark's Comics.
Comic Sorry. Shop News. Somebody just commented. I just wanted
Correct.
To
say. Yes. Comic shop News. Thank you. So, yes. So then St. Mark's. Derek? Sorry, yes. Go ahead.
No, Pete just keeps interrupting.
I'm super long-winded.
It's fine. Derek Mainhart said Comic Shop News. You were saying you talked to St. Mark's Comics, which is now, actually, not to dox myself, but like two blocks away from me. So I go
That's there awesome.
Pretty, yeah, regularly with the kids.
Tell Mitch I said hello. That's an awesome shop, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a great shop.
They got nice upgrade, surprisingly, when they moved away from St. Mark's, which is kind of crazy, but...
The whole story was a very interesting story that you know Mitch told us, and it was great to hear. But you know, the more and more we talk, right? We talk to shop owners, and we find that, you know, the industry is not doing great, and that's kind of where we're going. We with the next set of shops we interview, right? We're actually scheduled, we're working on the schedule with another shop, Coliseum of Comics, Phil Boyle, which I think someone may know of the open letter that he just wrote to Marvel in DC. I believe it's a hot topic. I think it was on Bleeding Cool, but he's actually an owner of several comic shops called Coliseum of Comics here in Florida. So I guess a very long-winded answer is that there's no like reason, personal reason why I went after these shops. It's more of a, where the story is, right? We get a lot of emails and DMs saying, hey, we want to be in your documentary, but it's unfortunate. Like we can't like talk to everybody, right? We want to go after the stories. There are a few shops that we do want to speak to, but I'm not going to put them on blast on.
No spoilers.
We're working on them. We're working on it.
I have a bunch of different questions to ask you, but I just want to ask you sort of like a logistical production question at this point without getting into specifics about the shops, but there's a lot of different directions you could potentially go in here. For anybody who's just listening and hasn't seen the video footage, I'll mention you have some very nice, well-lit setups of the folks sitting in the middle of the shots. They look really good. You have, you know, some cut-ins of them looking through the comics and talking them through the stacks and everything. I could see this is the sort of thing you could talk to customers. You could go and talk to the comic book companies. You could head to conventions. There's so many different directions you could go in. Where else does this need to go and where does it need to hone it?
So we are working on some stuff with MegaCon, which is coming up. It's a hometown convention for me. It's not too far. So just waiting on final media approval so we can go to the convention, get that. We do want to speak to collectors who have been in, you know, collecting and reading and, you know, for a long time who have a story to tell, right? Because the story that we're trying to tell is why are comics important? Why are comic shops struggling? How can we help them? That's the story, right? So it's kind of like, you know, an up, a down, and a back up. And so we want to talk to shop owners. We want to talk to, we would love to talk to people, the creators. We'd love to talk to some writers, some artists, like basically people who have skin in the game. But we're open to talking to interviewing everyone. We actually are speaking to a Whatnot seller. We're interviewing so soon because that's part of the industry too. That's technically part of comic book retail, right? So yeah, I mean, we are actively working on a lot of different things, getting a lot of creators.
And are you, this is not to give you prompts, but are you going to be talking to Diamond and Lunar as well? Is that part of the goal? Or is that too far?
And CGC and that is CGC. We've approached them. We haven't heard back yet, but yeah, we are really trying to make this as, we're trying to take it as far as we can. The you know, the goalpost is Netflix, you know, in terms of quality and you know, story. I think we're there. I definitely feel confident that we can get it, you know, we can get it on a streaming platform. So
Is it hard where you got to decide who to listen to and who not to? Because, you know, someone might watch that trailer and say, look at that person flipping through a comic without gloves on. That's a slap in my face.
in specific would say that.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, how do you, you know, like.
Yeah. So I just put it this way. I just need to, I think once we're funded, I'm going to hire someone just to take care of the comments and social media. Because I get too attached. And I just like. Like someone will say something nasty that I don't necessarily agree with. And I might take it not about the work, not about our work. I'm very thick skinned when it comes to our work, but I'll defend that person who's not wearing gloves. I'll be like, well, it's not your comic, you know, it's, you know, it's you know, and he knows what he's doing, you know, I'm sure, you know, whatever, you know, but yeah, basically, I'm sorry, we are listening to a lot of different things. We're seeing a lot of different opinions, a lot of different...
sorry to interrupt, Pete. This actually ties into a question we got here on YouTube. Were there opinions from different store owners that seem to be diametrically opposed?
100%. A lot of different opinions. And I think that's the beauty of the industry and our hobby is that, you know, like everyone can have different opinions as human beings. Like we all have different thoughts. We all like different things. You may love the new Batman. I can't stand it. right? The current Batman book. But on the other hand, like, you may hate the current Transformers book that's out now, and I love it, right?
Yeah.
We all have different opinions, and I think that's going to make the documentary stronger, hearing these different opinions. We're definitely, one of the biggest things was like the graded versus non-graded, right? Slabbing, yeah. And not slabbing. That's like such a hot topic.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, definitely. I see the comments. We absolutely are hearing different opinions.
Cool. I do want to ask you about this, and I know this is like a hot button subject, but part of the discussion that's going on right now, again, for anybody who's listening, who's not aware, many different aspects to this, but recently there was a comic shop owner out of Massachusetts, a little snippet of a rant that he made got put online. It got picked up by Mark Millar, who put him on a YouTube show, I believe.
Yeah.
Right now, competing. This is crazy that Mark Millar would do a competing YouTube show with our YouTube show. That's like wild to me. But he's, I believe, talking to some retailers right now as well. This has gotten very caught up with the Comicsgate community, which is, I'll say, toxic, I think.
Yeah.
Is that anything that you've touched on? Is that anything that's come up while you've been talking to comic shop owners? And is that anything that you're going to be trying to address at all?
It's not come up at all.
Okay.
It's never once come up. I'm assuming you're referring, I know who you're referring to. I do assume that you're referring to in particular the woke comments, like wokeness and stuff. We haven't heard anything. And again, we've been talking to shop owners who have owned their shops. Four of them have owned their shops longer than I've been alive. Like, so, you know, I mean, we're talking people who are, I'm 40 years old, and these guys have been in the industry for a long, long time, and it hasn't come up. And it's not, I don't think it's not come up because it's not a problem per se. It's something that we are probably going to talk about, but man, it's tough to really talk about this.
This is, to be clear, like, I'm not trying to put you on the spot
at all
hold you down to anything, but it's the sort of thing that, like, it's from my, this is my opinion, not to be like, hey, this is what you got to do with your doc, but it's an intrinsic part of one of the problems with the comic book industry right now. But I could see from the perspective of documentary, you can't just be like, and here's 2 minutes on Comicsgate. Now back to what we were talking about. And you're not going to be giving it the proper time that it deserves, but also to ignore it at the same time is tough to do. So,
you know, just as a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, I don't want to make anyone look bad. There are documentaries out there. I don't know if you guys follow Formula One at all, racing, but, you know, there was a documentary show called Drive to Survive, and they paint certain drivers to be villains. And to the point where these drivers don't want to be on the show, and they had to like come up with a deal to appear on the show in later seasons. So there comes, as a documentary filmmaker, there is a there's a fine line you have to walk between entertainment and informative, and you still have to maintain your journalistic integrity. And that's something that we really want to do, is we don't want to make anyone look bad, right? We don't, get me wrong, like, there are things that have been said that you're like, oh crap, that would be really good if we spin it a certain way. And like, if we edit it, like, ooh, this guy says he hates slabs, and then this guy says anyone who likes slabs is an idiot. You know, like, we could edit that together and make that so interesting. We don't want to do that. So I'm in talks with my co-director Danny about that whole topic, because it's blowing up even more so right now. But I will say, on a personal level, I personally don't care what anyone does with their life, but I will say the negativity is hurting the industry.
In what direction do you mean?
A lot of hate. There's a lot of hate, which is unfortunate. And I think there's also a lot of things being blown out of proportion, in my opinion, just my personal opinion. But you know, like I said earlier, like, if you look on a wall of comics every week, there's hundreds and hundreds of comics. And if you can't pick out 5 books on that wall that are good comics, then you're not looking hard enough.
Yeah.
So
totally, 100% agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah. Did I cut you off, Pete?
Not at all. Oh. Sorry, Pete.
Okay. Well, talk about the next steps for this documentary then. To get out this topic for a second. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're currently in the pre-launch of our crowdfunding campaign, because right now everything has been out of my pocket, and producing a documentary at this level is expensive. We have a crew, we have you know, expenses. We have to eventually pay licensing. I am sure of it. I'm sure there's going to be something that pops up. And we want to make this the best we possibly can. We want to get this as far as we can, you know, which means getting it into film festivals, and film festivals cost money. Yeah. So next, we're currently in the pre-launch of our crowdfunding stage. We're doing some organic social media promotions. We're doing a giveaway right now. It's actually live. It's for a graded copy of Spider-Man number one, Todd McFarlane. So it's on our Instagram. Wow. So we're doing giveaways and all sorts of stuff. And then we launch our campaign on Indiegogo, I think January 6th.
Awesome.
And
that is very exciting. I'm very excited to follow this. I'm excited to see how this all comes together. I mean, I will say, from probably nowhere near as strong as you, but coming from a video production background, it was nice to, when you sent us this pitch, being like, all right, I guess I'll watch this trailer. And I was like, oh, this looks good. Oh, they shot it well. Oh, that's so exciting.
Thank you.
So
I'm very proud of the team. Like, the guys are killing it. You know, everyone from my co-director, Danny, my buddy, Matt, great cinematographer, Loxley, everyone who's been on it, Andy, AJ, like the whole team is phenomenal. And I can't wait to see, like, once we get some funding, like what we could really produce and where we can go. We want to go to the West Coast. We want to go to Texas. We've got stuff. We got a long list of people we want to talk to.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, you got my local store, so you're good. You can wrap up shop now. You've got the one important one. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for chatting. Absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to this project.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks, Joe. Have a good night. All right. There we go. Once again, that is Surviving Comics. It was Joe Niccolo. And you can check that out very soon. A little less than a month at this point over on Indiegogo. And like
definitely
we said,
worth checking out the trailer. It's very cool.
Yeah, for sure. Like we said, it's a really, really good looking project. And I think based on what he's saying, something really worth supporting. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, there's nothing better than going to like a new place, checking out their comic book shop. Oh, it's awesome.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And the only thing more awesome is our next section, because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And what you gotta do is drop a question in the comments over on YouTube or Facebook or Twitch, not Twitter/X, because that platform is a total garbage fire. Pete, what are you drinking tonight? I should mention Stray Bullet, who coordinates our cocktails every week, or designs a cocktail. He put up an amazing sounding recipe for his eggnog. I believe he did it last year as well.
Wow, there's nothing like some nog.
Oh my God. His eggnog sounds absolutely amazing. It's a huge batch of it though. So I think I'm off from work next week. I'm going to make some eggnog and then I'm going to be schnockered all week long.
I thought you were going to say, I'm off work. I'm going to go down and visit him and drink my way through that tub of nog.
I'm going to go fly down to New Orleans,
go to New Orleans,
just like Garfield style, drink a tub of nog and then fly right home.
I mean, it would be worth it. It would be worth it.
What are you drinking, Pete?
I'm drinking some light. You know what I mean? Yeah, just some what's left in the fridge beers.
Nice. I am drinking a Manhattan tonight. That's it.
Oh.
It's nice and simple, but it's good. Nice to go back to the basics. We got a question here from Derek. Says, Pete, could you walk us through your wall? Classic turnabout.
Classic turnabout. Yeah, these are my comic books, my comic book collection here. I got Murder Falcon here. Nice. I got a little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle artwork. That's the last Calvin and Hobbes panel ever published. That was the last one before he stopped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was gifted to me by our lovely supporters on my birthday a while ago. It's a panel from Murder Falcon. That's my Arseface Funko Pop.
Awesome.
And then I should mention Wolverine right here. And then
should I mention the Funko Pops that I got today, Pete?
Oh, yeah, man.
I got a package from Funko, which was very nice. They were like, thank you for supporting us over the course of the year. So they sent me a Western Ken from the movie Barbie. Very exciting. They also sent me a President Barbie from the movie Barbie. You know, and I don't know. I haven't checked, but I believe if you press the back, she says the Godfather. And then to complete the set of the three, they sent me Mewtwo from Pokemon.
Who was,
I think, also in the Barbie movie, if I remember correctly.
I catch them all.
Yeah. Weird group of three things, but very nice. All of them. It's good. We got a couple of other questions here. This is from Kevin. The most dreamlike question I think we've ever gotten on the show. What are your childhood imaginings that you'd want to turn into comics?
Well, I used to, when I was a little kid, I used to draw my own comic, and it was about a little short kid named Pee-wee,
okay,
who could use his helicopter hat to fly and punch people who were mean to him in the face.
I used to draw a little character called Super Buggy. It was a tiny little bug, and he was just a couple of simple little lines. I bet I could probably draw him right now if I had to, but
oh wow,
there you go. He was just a sad little bug guy. And he'd go around to do his bug thing. So there you go.
Wow.
Two pitches for you. This is from Surviving Comics. What books are you looking forward to the most in 2024? Pete, got any 2024 books you're excited about? I'll mention one while you're thinking.
Oh, thank you.
I'm pretty psyched for the stuff coming out from Marvel, actually, in the first bunch of the year. The Ultimate line is interesting. I don't know how good it's going to be or how bad it's going to be, but Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Black Panther, Ultimate X-Men from Peach Momoko seems like a wild swing to me. So I'm really curious about that. And then also all the X-Men End of Krakoa stuff. Very curious to see how that's going to wrap up and what's next.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what X-Men are doing new and different in 2024. Like whatever, let's get past this and get on with some new shit. So that's what I'm looking forward to in 2024. I'm also looking forward to just to be an asshole, what DC's got coming out. I've been loving a lot of DC books lately.
That was the other thing that I was going to say is I've been seeing this popping around a lot. I have no idea what it is, but there is rumblings that DC is going to do something like potentially game-changing, potentially just like something entirely different and unexpected. Probably by the end of the year, maybe in 2025. But every time I've seen any sort of discussion written up online about like exactly what we're talking about earlier in the show about how DC and Marvel really need some shaking up, some insider is like, well, there is what's going to happen at DC, dot, dot, dot. So,
oh man,
I don't know what that means. I have no speculation about it, but I'm very curious. Because I do think that, like, DC has been trying some really interesting things lately. So, I don't know. We'll see. This is from Edward. Is Pete in his bunker?
It's my attic, but kind of.
Great. This is from David. What movie would make for a good comic adaptation? The Matrix.
Wow. You did it.
Great. I don't know. What else? Other movies? Pete, you love those Minions movies, right? Would you want to see that as a comic? Man.
Yeah. Minions comics where there's no real words. It's just all...
Da-na-na.
Yeah, that would be fun. Never Ending Story comic. Maybe that's already happened.
You know what? This is like back in the day. I think this movie came out, I want to say in 2010 or something like that. What if they made a comic out of Scott Pilgrim versus the World? Do you remember that movie?
No.
With Come Michael Cera?
Crazy.
The guy from Superbad. I think that would be fun. I don't know. That's a crazy idea.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
I want a, what was that Kevin Bacon movie? It was like Silver Streak or something where he was like this delivery guy on his bicycle in New York City. And he had like his rival, like bike gang was Lawrence Fishburne.
I kind of know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was like a great 80s movie. Like his girlfriend's a ballerina. They live in a warehouse in New York City and he rides a bike while she dances. It's fucking hysterical. Quicksilver. That's what it is.
Great idea. Edward says, what titles for the last 5 to 8 years will be reread in 20 to 30 years? I gotta say a lot of them. Every single one. No, legitimately, I know we've been saying this a lot on the show, but conversely to this, all this comics are dead talk, non-Marvel and DC comics are probably the best they've ever been.
Like, any comic Image puts out, I'm there. I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
I'm gonna read this.
I mean, in terms of new classics, like just off the top of my head, a lot of James Tynion and the IV stuff.
JC4
completely breaking through. Like World Tree has been dominating in terms of sales. Something is Killing the Children is also dominating in terms of sales. Deviant had a big pop there. For Free Comic Book Day, I think it's Boom Studios is putting out The Worlds of James Tynion IV, which is when you know somebody has made it as a creator just on their own name.
Yeah.
So I think look at any of his titles would be the short answer I would give. This is from Stray Bullet. Pete, can you walk us through each issue in the boxes behind you, please?
We don't have that kind of time, man. Those are packed. What sucks is, like, I wanted to store these all in chronological. Mm. These are all comics from the stack.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Man.
So, like, you know, I was...
That's our archive. You have.
I mailed them to my father because there's no storage space in New York City, and he alphabetized them. So...
That's a good dad.
Yeah, it's a great dad. He also handwritten every comic and so I got like a folder full of just like
that's amazing. But, can your dad do that for me? Because my shelves are a mess.
My dad had a Babe Ruth card and he had it in his basement and this basement flooded. So he's been like super nice about me collecting comics because I feel like he felt like he got gypped as a kid. So you kind of looked out for me like that.
Yes.
There's a corrections that I have that I keep forgetting.
Oh, that's right. Wait, do we want to get to that first?
No, that's all right.
Okay. Derek says, could you hold
I already did that while you were talking to something else. Yeah, it's all right.
Okay. Well, wait, let's get to the corrections then before we get to the rest of the, I forgot to bring that up. You had a correction from the previous audio.
Yeah, from when I was on last and someone asked me because Justin's mom listens. So now my mom listens to the show. So
and just to finish the triptych there, my mom asked me the other day, like, what's that pod? You do a podcast?
You do a what podcast?
What do you do? What is that? And I was like, all right. I've explained this several times.
Yeah. So anyways, so now my mom listens to the show and has a correction. Someone asked me how my Thanksgiving was, and I had mentioned the pie that I had that she makes, and she's taught me how to make. And I said it was a chocolate pecan pie, which is what I say when people ask me, because what it actually is a little different sounding, but people know what a chocolate pecan pie is. So when you say that, they're like, oh. But what it actually is
a pile of shit, right? In a pad?
No, it's a, that's not very nice. It's a chocolate bourbon walnut pie. Ooh. And I was like, Mom, okay. who cares? What's the difference?
No,
and she was I can't. How dare you? There are famous chefs who listen to your show.
I got to say, Pete, I'm going to side with your mom here. I know I just made a very off-color joke about it, but chocolate bourbon walnut pie sounds real good.
It's phenomenal. It's like my favorite thing to eat.
That's great. I wish anybody else in my family ate nuts, because I would make that in a second, but that sounds delightful. Tell you what, your dad and mom can come over to my house. She can make me a pie. He can alphabetize my comics. We'll have a very nice time.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. This is Edward says, how come there's no photos of your family or friends? I assume this is not the only room in your house at this point.
That's true. I do have a photo. I do have a photo of the three of us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, it just fell. It just fell over.
Okay. Oh, it just fell over.
It did. I just picked up a box and moved it.
While you're finding that, Michael Tillman says, well, war talk meetings, how do you organize your books? I think we said that it's chronologically, thanks to your dad. Oh, yay. I remember that.
Yeah.
That was at the Avengers. I don't remember the exact name of the thing, but it was the like Be an Avenger experience thing.
Yeah. What's hilarious is this is the day that I realized you have to iron your pants. Like, people are always like, oh yeah, you should iron your pants. And I was like, ah, oh, you know, if you like hang them up, you know, treat them right. And this, if you look closely at this photo, my khaki pants are ridiculous. And from then on, I iron my pants.
We learned important lessons that day. For anybody listening, I think we have a podcast version of this up. We hosted a show at this Avengers experience that traveled around, I believe, but it was in like near Times Square, and you could walk through and get your shield ID and take your picture with the various members of the Avengers. And they set out a space in the lobby and we interviewed him. It was very fun, fun night.
It was a fun day. Yeah.
Nelson Kelso says, have you guys had a chance to watch Merry Little Batman? Pete, have you watched Merry Little Batman yet on Prime Video?
No, I have not checked out Merry Little
Batman. Oh, I meant to text you or ask you about this, because Luke Wilson, as Nelson mentions, did the voice of Batman.
Oh my God, I cannot wait to watch this.
And the question here is, since Luke Wilson did the voice of Batman and Alex does a, I believe he says, excellent Luke Wilson impression, does this mean Alex is the future voice of Batman? Wow. Yeah.
Well, let's hope not.
Oh, wow. I'm the Dark Knight. Wow. Yes. It's very cute. It was oh my God, I'm totally blanking his name. I think it's Morgan Evans who wrote the movie, who's an old like UCB pit guy.
Oh really?
I worked with him at MTV as well. Yeah, it's very, very cute, very funny.
How long is it?
It's an hour and a half, which I will say, nothing against Morgan, but it's like it feels like a 45-minute special that occasionally is
I would say like it looked like,
but it's very cute, very sweet, and there's some good emotional beats as well, so very worth watching. I watched it with the kids. We had a nice time. This is from Will. What do you all think about Invincible versus Superbad? I don't know if this is based on anything. I guess who do you think would win in a fight, Invincible or Superbad?
Gotta feel like Superman would win that, right? I mean, Invincible, if Invincible had kryptonite, like...
I guess Invisible would always gets the shit beat out of him. So
yeah,
Omni-Man versus Superman. I don't know. Invincible versus Superman. Invincible loses. But Superman would be like, "Why are you doing this, kid? Let's talk it out." Easy Reader says, "What do you want for Christmas, Pete?"
Oh, geez, I don't even. I want a house that works better is what I would. I'm buried in ridiculous projects over here.
Edward Doherty says another universe reboot, great idea, DC. I do want to clarify, this is referring to the thing I was saying earlier about what DC is cooking up. Again, I have no idea what it is, but the way everybody is talking about it, I think if they were doing like a Super Infinite Crisis or something, they would not be talking about it this way. I think it's a publishing plan or something different along those lines that they're going to be doing. Like, I don't remember whether we talked about it here on the live show, but DC in June is going to be launching these soft cover versions of some of their best-selling graphic novels for $9.99. So you get like all of Watchmen for $9.99 or all of Far Sector for $9.99. And they're supposed to be really well printed, good quality stuff. Wow. I think DC is really trying things. Like, they're looking at the rest of the market. They're doing exactly what we've been talking about. They're not just looking at like, what is Marvel doing? What are we doing? Back and forth, back and forth. They're being like, in order to survive, we need to look at what is happening in the world of book publishing as a whole. That includes manga. They've been putting out a lot of interesting, fun manga stuff recently. That's in terms of like soft covers. People are more likely to buy a Dogman than they are a Superman, you know, to make that comparison. So like, they're looking at what is working and what is selling and figuring out, how can we do that? How can we experiment with that? Because we have these rosters of characters. This would be purely speculating, but again, just to clarify, like, the way everybody is talking about it, I think they would be very down on it if it was just a universe reboot. The implication is maybe it's something bigger or different that we're not expecting. But
you know, so what I don't understand that they don't do is just take like those Art Balthazar Tiny Titans things and just animate that. And like, I feel like that would kill at for a kid's show.
I agree. I don't know if that will necessarily revitalize comic book shops, but
it will. Trust me.
Okay. When you take over DC, man.
All right, great.
Joshua Wright says, you're in review. Which books or runs did you enjoy the most in 2023? Now, you guys haven't gotten back to my email, but I think the plan is the last live show of the year.
When you say you guys and you're talking to me,
I mean, both you and Justin, neither of you have gotten back to my email that I sent several weeks back. But I believe the plan, as long as we're all here and available, is to do our best of the year on the last show of the year, like we did last year. Does that sound good, Pete? Can I verbally hold you to it right now?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Very noncommittal. Great. Let's see. Ooh, we got a lot of things here.
Answer your question. We'll get back to you. We'll work on it.
Yes, we'll get back to you. Put a pin in that one. Have you ever laid the boxes flat and slept on top of them?
No, I respect the comics too much to try to do anything like that.
Can we have Pete's mom tailor a pie for next week's guests? All right. Yep. Stanley says, have you ever been to Times Square for New Year's Eve? I assume New Year's Eve and not just like it's generally New Year's. Pete, you're making face. You've never done it?
No, I would never. You couldn't pay me to do that.
So not only did I do that with
you live there.
I lived there for 2 years. I think it was like a year and a half. I think we were there for 2 New Years at least. We
Can
were
I ask
two
questions.
Yeah. Hi, what's up? Can I just finish up one thing first?
Sure.
So we lived in a duplex apartment with basement and first floor, and we didn't go to Times Square when we were living there, but we could hear people chanting the countdown, which was very fun. And then we'd be like, all right, we're going to go sleep in the basement. That's where we slept. And we would go downstairs, and there would just be people tramping by our basement window for hours after that. So honestly, very fun. What's your question?
But you said you have gone. You have done it.
Yes.
So my question to you is, at what point when you're just standing out on the street and, you know, like snipers are pointing at you, that you think this is the fun part? Like, is it just standing next to Cranston?
Well,
next to
so it was in it like college. I was with friends from high school that we were all like, oh my God, let's go to Times Square New Year's Eve. And we were,
and you were like, oh, that's a great idea.
We were very drunk, Pete.
Sure. I mean,
and at a certain point, here's the thing about it for anybody who's never done it. So first of all, you have to get there crazy early. I think
just stand there. You're just standing.
I don't remember the exact timing, but I believe like we got into the city at like 6 or 7. We got off at Penn Station because we lived on Long Island. Got off and we walked up and we're like, okay, we'll just, you know, pop into Times Square. And basically they were closing off every single block successively. So we'd get to a block, they'd be like, nope, we gotta go to the next one. And by the time we got there, they'd close off the next block. So we ended up at around Times Square, for anybody who doesn't know who's listening, is at 42nd Street. We were at like 54th Street or something, where if you're looking down, if it's clear, you can still see the ball and everything from that point. But at around 8 o'clock, 4 hours before the ball drops, we were like, well, just standing here. But as it got closer, people started to push and break through barricades and just like get closer and closer to Times Square. So I think we ended up totally crushed in at around, I don't know, I want to say 47th Street or something like that. But I had to use the bathroom from around, I don't know, 9:30 on. It was painful. Had a great time. Everybody's got to do it once.
Like, how do you have, how are you just drinking?
We brought a, but everybody had stowed a bottle of champagne and we were just like passing it around and had so much champagne and just kept going. It was a very nice time. I look back on it fondly.
Nothing about that says to me nice time.
It was great. I was in so much pain and I was so drunk and I felt horrible the next day. Everybody has to do it once. Samurai says, need me some Alex, Justin, and Pete weekly show talking comics, live Q&A, etc. Missing the old days. Yes, absolutely. We have just been, the schedule's all over the place, but yeah. Or by the end of the month, we absolutely will. Kevin says, is that Luke or Owen in relation to my Wilson impression? The answer is yes. This is from Will. I heard Marvel might do a solo Hulk movie. What storyline would you all want to see? There's always been so much confusion about the rights to Hulk, but that is the most recent rumor that they finally have the rights back. The other rumor is that Captain America 4 is essentially a World War Hulk movie. For whatever reason, but what would you want to see at this point? What would you want to see as a solo Hulk movie storyline?
Love at the Heart of an Atom. It's one of my favorite storylines. It's kind of one of the first things that I loved about the Hulk. It's when he shrinks down, falls in love with a princess, and it's a lovely story.
I don't think they'd ever do this, but if they want to do like a Mortal Hulk or the current Philip Kennedy Johnson run, do just like a straight up balls to the wall horror movie with the Hulk, that would be totally different. And I think very exciting and interesting. This is from Samurai as well. Do you know what happened to Cassidy? You saw the upcoming X-Force cover that went viral on social. For anybody who didn't see this, we did cover this on the Comic Book Club News podcast, but John Cassidy did a variant cover for X-Force 48. And it looks bad. It's Wolverine standing in front of Beast, who's hovering in the background, just his head. Beast seems to be both in profile and his jaw facing forward at the same time. Wolverine is short, but not in a good way. He seems scrunched, kind of. So a lot of people have been dunking on it, including professionals, which I will say, I don't love that. I don't like people dunking on him. Maybe he tried something, maybe it went wrong, maybe, I don't know. There was a lot of flap about the Frank Miller Marvel covers as well, so maybe there's an editor over there that's pushing people in different directions, but I don't think it looks good. Have you seen it, Pete?
No, I haven't.
All right, well, there
I blame
you go.
Jordan D. White.
I would not do that at all. Did you ever go to Tim Watley's apartment for Thanksgiving? I have no idea what that is in reference to. Pete, do you know?
No.
The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. Yes, absolutely. Just do a remake of the movie. Derek says, was the Cassidy cover a parody of the Millar covers? Maybe. I don't know. It just doesn't look good. It's a real bummer. Artist change over time. I don't know. Sometimes they lose it, but I feel like if anything, it's more of a failure of editorial to put out a cover that just looks bad because it reflects badly on Marvel or reflects badly on the artist. I don't know what the contracts are like. Maybe they're obligated to put it out, but it's a real bummer. And on that bummer note, why don't we end our audience questions and kick it over to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Beat LePage.
All right.
You faded out.
What?
Yeah, you faded out for a second.
Oh, I did. Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's right. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to fade out. Hey, it's a part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's for some reason.
Ooh, we got a hand pink waving from Easy Reader.
All right.
Yeah, Easy Reader got it.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. You ready, Pete? You ready? Yep. Easy Reader. Take it away in the comments.
All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on fun comic book facts and a small nod to the legend, Francis Strenhagen. R.I.P.
Strenhagen, right?
Strenhagen?
Is it Strenhagen or Strenhagen? Hmm. Do we have a Berenstain Bears thing going on here?
I think so. I think we do. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Dr. Doom once called Spider-Man a peasant for using what? Was it A, the door when entering a room, B, his feet for walking, or is it C, Woody Harrelson?
Easy Reader pre-guessed A, is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, next question, Pete.
Great. Question number two. In the comic, who did Black Panther slap in the face during Civil War? Was it A, Tony Stark, B, racism, or C, George Hamilton?
Ooh. Kevin, by the way, is guessing you're going for Cheers. Are you going for Cheers, Pete?
Nope. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Robin? A. You got an A.
A is correct. All right, here we go. Last one. Who said this line in the comics? Don't mess with me, lady. I've been drinking with skeletons. Was it A, Wolverine, B, Hellboy, or C, Bridget Fonda?
Hmm. I will say Bridget Fonda did say that once in real life.
Hmm.
So I don't know if that counts.
Doesn't count. I say in comics in the question.
Oh, sorry about that.
So...
Oh, Kevin has a guess here. We'll get to that in a second.
He nailed it.
You nailed it? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll see if Easy Reader comes up with A again.
It's B.
Oh, it's B.
That's right.
We'll see if he says B now that we've said B. Yeah. Let's assume that he did.
Yeah, he did.
Yay. Incredible. Now, Easy Reader, just hit us up on email and we will get you a gift card to Midtown Comics, or if you want to make a donation somewhere, that's the thing we do now as well. But Pete, the secret movie you were referring to for Francis Strenhagen.
Yep.
That's Doc Hollywood.
That's right. The 1991 banger, Doc Hollywood.
Ooh. All right. There we go. R.I.P. Now, as we all know, new comic books are coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
A lot of great stuff coming out this week, but I'll tell you, Titans Beast World number 2 and Titans Beast World Tour Gotham number 1.
Wow, you're loving this event.
I'm having such a great time, and those two comics were just fantastic. They're so great. I hope we get to talk about them together.
Oh, I guess we'll see what happens in the stack. Lots of stuff I'm looking forward to as well or intrigued by. I want to give a shout out to From the World of Minor Threats. The Alternates number 4 from Dark Horse Comics has been a great spinoff of the main series, focusing on addiction, among other things. Also very intrigued by Masterpiece number 1, also from Dark Horse Comics. You got Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev.
That's a great together. Team.
Great team.
Back That's a great
on
team.
On a new title. And also I was very excited about Spider-Gwen Smash number one, new Spider-Gwen series where she's touring around with her band. We'll see if I liked it or not. I always talk about these from the perspective of things I was excited about before I read them. And then we read them, of course, and then we tape the stack, which is up on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated feed. Check out all those reviews and many more. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Bunch of people we want to thank. We want to thank Austin McKinley for coming on to talk about Riot Force Taz Mechanic.
Yes.
We're talking about Lost Time. Definitely pick that up now.
Lost Time's unbelievable.
Joe Niccolo for talking about Surviving Comics. You'll be able to check out that soon on Indiegogo. Next week on the show, we got Rich Duak and Alex Cormack here to talk about their great book, Drive Like Hell. Jeffrey Brown is going to be back on the show to talk about Mandalorian and Child, his latest book in his all-ages Star Wars series. So that should be fun. Scott Pilgrim versus the podcast, our Scott Pilgrim podcast. I promise the last episode of Scott Pilgrim's Takes Off is coming later this week. So check that out if you need. Comic Book Club news comes out every single day of the week with 3 to 5 minutes of news in your ear holes. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We just did a rundown of a bunch of Marvel trailers. It was very fun. We missed you, Pete, but Justin and I talked about it. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Thanks, everybody.